you have to continue to be a two-income family.
Money flow.
What? I said
trouble,
but that's what
I know more than anything right now.
As much as we know, I assure you that you don't know. Good morning, everyone. Good morning. It's wonderful to see everybody enjoying bagels. It's donuts. It's Nyana Diyama to have chametz. There are those that hold that you have to make sure to eat chametz up until Pesach, and so it's good to see that everybody is fulfilling this important notion. I want to thank Rabbi Yehuda Seif and Gwen Horowitz and all the others who assisted in the logistics for preparing for today's event. I also have a tremendous debt of Hakar Zatov to a longtime friend, Rabbi Zev Reichman, for making it here yesterday. He has many responsibilities. One of those responsibilities is he's also a rabbi. It's not the only thing that he does, but he's also a rabbi, and his rabbinic and professional requirements prevented him from coming last week, and the fact that he was able to make up and come this week as it gets closer to Pesach is a sign of his general commitment when he takes upon a responsibility. And Rabbi Reichman has a very distinguished yichus pedigree on both sides of his family, and Yeshiva University, unlike most other yeshivos, is a meritocracy, and to get a position there is not based on who your father is, who your father-in-law is. And on the contrary, if your father happens to be a Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Reichman's father is, so that's a strike against you, and it's a real indication of Rabbi Reichman's scholastic abilities, but also his creativity in being able to reach a wide array of audiences, to be able to impart the remarkable degree of knowledge that he has. And for somebody who was primarily schooled in a Lithuanian yeshiva, his breadth and scope of knowledge is far beyond what's standardly studied in yeshivish circles. His knowledge of Hasidus and many other areas of Jewish thought is really a tribute to not only his intellectual curiosity, but to what's important at the core of his neshama. And he juggles a lot of different responsibilities, and brings not only, as I mentioned, a breadth of knowledge, but a high degree of creativity to his thinking, and also, and I have experience to know, and how he's dealt with situations, creativity to the chesed that he performs. I regret on a personal level that I'm not going to be able to stay for the entire presentation because also of some professional requirements that have come up. But it's a treat and an honor to go into Pesach and be able to hear a shir from Rabbi Reichman. I want to welcome in particular colleague Rabbi Yonah Gross, who traveled a great distance all the way from the other side of town to be with us, all the way from Wynwood. And I hope that you enjoy the shir. I think there are Mar Makomo sheets that are floating around. If there's a shortage of them, please share.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Schmidman, and thank you to Rabbi Dr. Yehuda Seif for all of his efforts, and thank you for understanding why I couldn't be here last week. As we all know, that in regards to chametz, we have a tremendous amount of stringencies. Number one, on Pesach itself, chametz asur b'mashehu. Even a minuscule trace of chametz is asur. There are even poskim, Minchas Yitzchak and others, who entertain the idea that in Israel, One would not be allowed to use tap water during Pesach because conceivably it could be that in the Kinneret, which is the reservoir of Israel, some Jews who unfortunately are not yet observant may be swimming, and when they're swimming and bathing, they may drop into the Kinneret some piece of chametz that they didn't get rid of. And since all of the water is really connected, there may be some mashahu of chametz, some little trace amount of chametz that's coming through the tap, and chametz is aser b'mashahu, and therefore, when I went to yeshiva in Israel, to the Chevron Yeshiva, one of our Rashi yeshiva of Hillel Zaks, actually had a separate container of water that he had filled up before Pesach, because that way, even if there is a little trace of chametz, we know that chametz in small measure is batel before Pesach. The prohibition or the law that chametz aser b'mashu is only a taroves that happens on Pesach. If there was a mixture that occurred before Pesach, it'd be batel. So he made, he collected a big amount of water, and therefore he was confident that there was no iser chametz b'mashu. Now there are many reasons to be lenient on this question, but the fact that it is taken seriously is certainly an indication of how machmir we are with chametz. I saw this morning there was a lot of business going on with Rabbi Schmidman, and that's another great example of the chumrah of chametz, the great stringency in regard to chametz, that when we try to sell chametz, we're really not confident that we're going to do such a good job. So we go to a rabbi and we make a shtar harsha, we appoint the rabbi as our shliach, or maybe even as our employee, as our poel, we give him some money so that he's literally has the authority to sell the chametz. And then the rabbi goes to a non-Jew and he does six different kinyanim with the non-Jew to make sure that this kinyan works. He does a kinyan kesef. The non-Jew has to give a pruta, has to give at least, nowadays it's about 2 cents, 3 cents for every lot of chametz that the non-Jew is buying. The value of the chametz has a certain value. So, let's say in one person's house it's $1,000, someone else's house it's $50, depending on how much liquor is in the closet. So he goes to the non-Jew, will give a down payment, so he'll do a kinyan kesef. In addition to a kinyan kesef, the non-Jew signs a deed of sale. So there's a kinyan shtar. In addition to kinyan shtar, the non-Jew rents the area where the chametz is. And in that, so he gives money again to rent the area. And once he's renting the area where the chametz is, he acquires the chametz with a kinyan chatzer. In addition to a kinyan chatzer, he does a kinyan agav since he's renting the area. So agav karka, he's also kone metaltalin. And we do a kinyan chalipin. We also have him pick up a sudr, pick up a handkerchief, and we do the kinyan of situmta, what we call minag ha-sochrim, the common business practice of the non-Jew shaking on the deal to make sure that this kinyan really works, to make sure we really accomplish the goal of getting the chametz out. Again, this is a tremendous chumrah within chametz to be 100% sure that we got it out. And the truth is, we don't have to look far to find the chumrah of chametz. We know that we have the minig of kitnios, and nowadays there are even those who would prohibit kitnios shenishtanu, even a tarovas kitnios, there are those who try to stay away from it. All of this again is an expression of the chumrah of chametz, the great stringency of chametz beyond normal levels of stringency when we deal with prohibitions. And it, really the Masechta begins with this. Masechta Pesachim begins with Oral Arba Asar, the night of the 14th. We look for chametz to the light of a candle. So why do we have bedikas chametz the night before? That is the famous machlokas Rishonim. Rashi says because we want to make sure that we fulfill the mitzvah of Valyura Valyimatze, not to have the chametz. And Tosva says, Valyura Valyimatze, well that you could have accomplished with bitzel, and you're going to say bitzel anyway, you're going to say it's not here, it's not mine. So that it's hefker, so that's already Valyura Valyimatze, you don't own it. So Tosa says the reason for Bedikas Chametz is beyond Bayrova. You might say we're afraid that a person might eat the Chametz. He might find Chametz, he might eat it, and that's the reason why we have the law of Bedikas Chametz. And the Ran very famously adds to what Tosfos says. Really, Tosfos seems to say this answer. The Ran says it could be that Bayirov Al-Yimatzeh itself was a stringency. In other words, here, when it comes to Chametz, it's unlike other Yisurei Hana. Typically, Yisurei Hana, you have something which you're not allowed to eat or benefit from, Klai Yakarem, or other Yisurei Hana. It's Aser, that's it. You can't benefit from it. But in Chametz, it's hard, because sometimes you could benefit from it, sometimes you can't. During the year, you're allowed to eat Chametz, but come Pesach, not only can't you eat Chametz, you can't get any benefit from Chametz, it's Aser Bahana, you have to destroy it, you can't get any benefit from it, you can't, if you eat it, it would be a Chiyuv Kares. It's very hard to go from something that I'm allowed to eat, something that I'm having every Friday night, and suddenly, if I eat it, it's the worst thing in the world, it's a Chiyuv Kares, there's a death penalty. So, lo bedili minei, people don't separate from it. So since people don't separate from it, it's hard for people to suddenly turn off. Therefore, Hashem said, "Val yiroh, val yimatzeh, don't even have it found." And Chazal said, "We understand it's hard to suddenly stop this activity," and therefore Chazal added chumros of the prohibition of chametz, and we've added with Minhag Yisrael even further chumros beyond it. The Prima Gadim. This Prima Gadim is in his Psicha, in his introduction to his commentary to Or HaChaim. The Prima Gadim says that it's well known that there is a Kabbalistic reason as to why Chametz is so prohibited, and Be'ezrat Hashem, we will dwell on that. He says, but maybe this thought of the Ran is a Nigla reason as to why Chametz is so prohibited. In other words, here, Hashem Himself is causing us to stay away from Chametz. Think of Hilchos Nida. We know that in Hilchos Nida, Hashem said, not only can't a person have marital relations with a Nida, but the Torah says, Ve'el Yisha b'nidas tum asa lo sikrivu legalos erva. To a woman during her Nidas, don't even come close to be Megala Erva. So Hashem created a Geder. Hashem created a Siyag. Hashem created a distancing. Hashem said, don't get close. So therefore, we know there are a lot of harchakos in regards to Hilchos Nida, a lot of activities that we are not to do because they might lead us to possibly the violation of Nida. But some of those are actually D'oraisa. Chibuk v'nishuk, or maybe sleeping in the same bed, that might be a d'oraisa harchaka. Then other harchakos, passing things to a nida, or playing tennis with a nida, those already aren't d'oraisa, that's drabanan. So where does that come from? Since Hashem already showed us that on a d'oraisa level, this is a prohibition where He's creating siyagim, He's creating boundaries, so then on a Durabbanan level, Chazal realized we have to follow the pattern that Hashem set for us, called the Tikkun Rabbanan, Kein D'oraisa Tikkun. Doesn't just mean that when Chazal create Dinim Durabbanan, they model it on a Din D'oraisa. They learn from the D'oraisa what the priorities are. If Hashem is creating Siyagim, if Hashem is creating laws to keep us from the action with the Nida, so then we, when they're creating the Din of Rabbanan, they also have to create laws in the same way. If Hashem is machmir on this mitzvah, Chazal learned we have to be machmir on this mitzvah. So the Prima Gadim says that could be, is the reason why there's such chumra of chametz. Why is there such a chomer in regards to chametz? Because Hashem told us to be machmir on chametz, because Hashem was machmir on chametz. Hashem created the Isser of Bal Yiroh, Bal Yimatzeh to keep us from eating chametz. Now the Tam of the Kra the reasoning are really drabbanan type of reasons. The Ran's reasons are drabbanan reasons. Person eats chametz the whole year, it's hard to stop. You know, we're learning Erevin now. Right? A person walks in a mavui, it's hard to not walk out until the Rosh Hasharabim. So it's the same type of logic that you'd usually have in a drabbanan. A person's eating chametz the whole year, it's hard to suddenly stop and realize, oh my gosh, it's a terrible thing now, it's a chi of kares, lo b'dilimine. So therefore, since lo b'dilimine, Hashem created a gzeira, Hashem's gzeira was bal yirah val yimatzeh, and if Hashem creates the gzeira bal yirah val yimatzeh, Chazal learned that they need to extend that gzeira. They also need to create many, many gzeiros. They'll create a gzeira of chametz aser ben mashu. They'll say you need to check for chametz the night before. Even though you're going to do bittul, you still need to clean out the house. Even if you sell all the chametz that you have, you also need to clean out the house. Why make all of these chumros? Because if Hashem started with chumros, we also should start with chumros. Now this svara that there could be really different types of dinim d'oraisa, that you have some dinim d'oraisa where Hashem says, listen, this is what I want you to do. These are the really important things. And then there are other dinim d'oraisa where Hashem says, I want you to stay away from real big violations. So therefore, I'm creating a gedder, I'm creating a fence to keep you from it. It's a famous essay of Rav Yosef Engel in his Sefer Lekach Tov Klal Ches. Rav Yosef Engel discusses this question, is there such a thing as a siyag d'oraisa? And he quotes the Ran, and he quotes the Prima Gadim, Yesh tam nigla mashich mira torah b'al yirah b'chametz, b'shailas v'tshuvas hatashbetz, yavon yishmuah ma'amar chametz, daf chavtal ramad alaf hatam, t'lo b'dili minevi yavo lechol, hichmira torah bo. Since the Torah is machmir, and the Torah created a geder, therefore Chazal also make a geder. Another example that Rav Yosef Engel gives to this type of a mitzvah, Rav Yosef Engel says, is the mitzvah of not for a nazir not to drink grape juice or not to eat a grape product. Mishras anavim. The basic prohibition, says Rav Yosef Engel, is really wine. Hashem doesn't want the nazir to drink wine. But if the nazir would be able to drink water that had some grapes seeped into it, that might lead him to soon drink wine. And therefore Hashem said, don't drink grape juice for a nazir, because it would lead to wine. So Rabbi Yosef Engel then says a very big chiddush in light of this svara. He says, we know we have a rule in Gozrin Gzeira L'Gzeira that there's no such thing as Chazal making a decree to keep us from violating a decree. Sometimes it's hard to know the rules. Sometimes it's kula chada gzeri. It's all one big gzera. Just like we know you can't sit on an animal on Shabbos or lean on an animal on Shabbos because you might end up pulling off a branch from a tree. So it's not that we're worried that if you lean on it, then you might sit on it. But and sit because sitting on it is only aser because you might pull the branch from the tree. You have to say that the leaning also is all one. It's all one gzeira. Leaning is considered sitting on it, and what was prohibited was sitting on it. So it's hard to know what is the difference between kula chada gzeira and what is engozrin gzeira l'gzeira. But if you can come up with situations, you can. Sometimes engozrin gzeira l'gzeira, Chazal say, we have one drabanan, we don't make a drabanan to keep us from a drabanan. Said Rabbi Yosef Engel, on these dinim d'oraisa, that themselves are a siyag, mid oraisa, you would have the rule of ein gozrin gzeira l'gzeira. So what does that mean, mid oraisa, you have the rule of ein gozrin gzeira l'gzeira? So if Yosef Engel believes that the isser of chatzi shir is also a siyag d'oraisa. Why does the Gemara say chatzi shir asam in HaTorah, doing less than the full amount is also asam d'oraisa? Because the Gemara says, Chazi liv starufe. Says Rabbi Yosef Engel, what does Chazi liv starufe mean? It means if I eat half a kezayis of chelev, I might change my mind and eat within kedei achilas pras another half a kezayis of chelev. And that's a d'oraisa svara. Says Rabbi Yosef Engel, you wouldn't have chatzi shir aser min haTorah in the law of Mishra Sanavin, in the law of grape juice to a nazir. Why? Because grape juice to a nazir is a siyag doraisa, and you don't have on a doraisa level doraisa gzeros on doraisa gzeros, just like on a drabbanan, you don't have gzero le gzero. Now, I mean, drabbanan, they could prohibit half, you know, half an ounce of grape juice to a nazir. Fine, drabbanan will add, but ain goes in gzero le gzera is true on a doraisa level, and therefore the Minchas Chinuch also says that when it gets to Bal Yirah Val Yimatzeh, we wouldn't say in Bal Yirah Val Yimatzeh Chatzi Shir Aser Min HaTorah. Maybe there's a law of Chatzi Shir in a drabana, on a drabanan level, but to say on a d'oraisa level at Min HaTorah Chatzi Shir is Aser, not in Bal Yirah Val Yimatzeh, because since Bal Yirah Val Yimatzeh itself is a siyag, it's a gzeira to keep us from actual eating of chametz on Pesach, and that's something very hard to avoid, because we're used to it, and we're in the habit of doing it. So therefore, midoraisa, there's the same concept of ein gozrin gzeira l'gzeira. My friend and cousin, Rabbi Daniel Feldman, in an essay that he wrote in memory of Rosh Yeshiva of Karen Biavne, in a book that I believe Rabbi Schmidman co-edited, in memory of Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldwicht. So he wrote an essay on this essay of Rav Yosef Engel, and he asked, it's very creative, number one, to think that there is a gzeira d'oraisa, but it's even more creative to say that the law of Ein Gozrin Gzeira L'Gzeira is something that binds Hashem. I mean, Hashem can make up whatever rules He wants. Okay, talk about Drabbanan, so the Drabbanan, they'll make a Gzeira, they wouldn't make a Gzeira to a Gzeira. But if you're going to say Chatzi Shir is Aser Min HaTorah as a form of a Gzeira, okay, and then you'll say grape juice to a Nazir is Aser Min HaTorah as a form of a Gzeira. So Hashem doesn't make His Gzeira to keep from another Gzeira that He made. How do we know? One of the basic understandings, we don't understand Hashem, we accept His mitzvahs, that we could apply the rule of Ein Gozrin Gzeira L'Gzeira on a D'oraisa level, the same way we know that it applies on a D'rabbanan level. And he suggests that maybe this is again a further amplification of the idea that called the Tikkun Rabbanan Ke'ein D'oraisa Tikkun. The Mishnah in Avos to Reb Nasan says, Harehu Omer Ve'Elisha Benidasa Lo Sikrav, the Torah says that you shouldn't come close to a Nida, Yachol Yechabkena, maybe he can hug her, Tamalomer Lo Sikrav, he can't come close. Now, the Mishnah then goes on to talk about all sorts of harchakos that are drabanan, but it links it all to this pasuk of lo sikrav. So what's the Mishnah saying? That the drabanan learn from the d'oraisa, and actually if you want to understand the d'oraisa, you could see what the drabanan did, because they would always copy the din d'oraisa. So if we know that there is a law in drabanan law, in Gozun Gzeira L'Gzeira, that when Chazal make one Gzeira, they don't add another Gzeira on top of that Gzeira. They don't add a later Gzeira to keep you from the first Gzeira. So where did they get that from? They must have gotten it from a D'oraisa source. That means in D'oraisa Gzeiros, assuming that there is such a thing as D'oraisa Gzeiros, in D'oraisa Gzeiros there is the rule of Ein Gozrin Gzeira L'Gzeira. Because everything that Chazal did was to really continue the pattern that was first established by the Din D'oraisa. So that's, you know, one answer as to why we have such a chomer in regards to chametz, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is machmir in chametz, HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes gzeros in chametz, so if Hashem made gzeros in chametz, so we also knew, Chazal knew, they have to make added gzeros in chametz. However, the Mekubalim suggest that it just doesn't add up. I mean, the level of chumrah in regards to chametz is very, 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 very severe. Chametz aser b'mashu. We talk about things getting confused with chametz. It's a tremendous level of severity. And to just say, okay, here is a situation where HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a gzeira, so we should also make gzeiros. I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a gzeira of Mishras Anavim, a gzeira of Losikrav Ulegal, Elisha Benidas Tumasa Losikrav. So to add, there we don't find such levels of chumrah. So why here, in regards to chametz, is there such a level of chumrah? And here the very classical answer is that chametz represents the Yetzer Hara. Chametz represents the urge for evil. And we have the famous Gemara in Maseches Brachos. The Gemara on Daf Yud Zayin in Maseches Brachos is discussing different tfilos that would be recited at the end of Shmona Esrei. And the Gemara says, Rebbe Alexandri, Basa Damatzli Amar Hachi, Rebbe Alexandri, after he would daven, Shmona Esrei would say, Ribono Olamim, Master of the World, Galub Yadua Lefanecha, Sheritzoneinu Lasos Ritzoncha. You know that we want to fulfill your will. Umima Akev, what's stopping us from fulfilling your will? Saor Shebi'isa, the leaven that's in the dough, the Shibud Malchios, and the control of various nations. Yiratzam Lefanecha Shetatzilenu Miyadam, may it be your will that you save us from their hand. V'nashav lasos chukei ritzonecha b'lev of shalem. And we should return to fulfilling your will with a full heart. So that's a very interesting phrase that Rabbi Alexandri used. He spoke about Sa'or Shebe'isa. What do you mean Sa'or Shebe'isa? The leaven, that sourdough that makes the dough rise and ferment, that's what's stopping us from serving Hashem. What's stopping us from serving Hashem, being government decrees, we can understand. We know there were many times that the non-Jews prohibited us from practicing our religion. But Saor Shebe'isa, so apparently Rabbi Alexandri, when he wants to talk about the Yetzer Hara, the urge for evil, he calls it Saor Shebe'isa, the leaven in bread. Chametz. Chametz represents the Yetzer Hara itself. It represents the Yetzer Hara. And since it represents the Yetzer Hara, there has to be a tremendous stringency about it, because we have to get rid of all of this Sa'or Shebe'isa. We have to get rid of the very root of sin, the urge for sin, what leads us to sin. So why would chametz be the symbol of the Yetzer Hara? What is it about chametz that makes it the Yetzer Hara? So for this, I'd like to share a thought that I heard from one of my teachers, Rav Mordechai Menashe Silver, who's the Stachina Rebbe. He's an amazingly creative thinker in Chassidus and Kabbalah. Amazing. And this really goes to the heart of the Kabbalah of the Ari HaKadosh, which really is the source of Chassidus and the Tanya and many, many other great works. It's very well known that the Mekubalim teach, Ramchal talks about this in Adir Bamaron, and those sections of Torah which seemingly have no lesson, seemingly we don't understand why it's in the Torah, the deepest secrets of Torah are to be found there. So one such example is the end of Parshas Vayishlach. In the end of Parshas Vayishlach, the Torah talks about the descendants of Esav. And at the very, very end of Parshas Vayishlach, the Torah says that there were melachim, there were kings of Edom, who ruled lifnei meloch melech li Yisrael, before there was a Jewish king. And the Torah lists 8 kings: Bela, Mahatavel, and eventually the last one, Hadar. About each of these kings, the Torah says he ruled and he died. He ruled and he died. Vayimloch tachtav, instead of him, someone else ruled. Why would the Torah tell us about 8 kings of Edom before there was a Jewish king? Who cares? We don't know anything about them other than their names. He was so-and-so, the son of so-and-so. He died. His son didn't take over. Somebody else took over. He died. His son didn't take over. Someone else took over. Why would the Torah tell us this? So Ramchal explains that here is the secret of the Shviras HaKelim. When Hashem created the world, there was a monumental explosion. And that explosion, the Shviras HaKelim, the shattering of the vessels, is the reason why there is a physical world in its current state, why there is a physical world where the physicality draws us to sin. All of that emerges from Shviras HaKelim. So to explain this a little bit, let's begin. Before there was a world, there was just the infinite presence of Hashem, the Or Ein Sof of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How did Hashem make a world, namely a realm of limited beings? Limited beings cannot survive in the presence of an unlimited light. A finite being in the presence of that which is infinite disappears. If we think of, just as a parable, someone were to go up to Niagara Falls with a small little plastic cup, and there was that fellow who crossed Niagara Falls last year. So someone would go on a trip, a wire, and flip over, and then put his cup underneath the falls to try to hold all the water of the falls into his cup. So of course the cup would explode. It can't exist. It's so tiny relative to such an unbelievable, overwhelming force. So every finite being, by definition, in the presence of a being who's not finite, a being who fills all space, who enters all space, who's infinite, blows up, disappears, can't exist. So how was there the possibility for a world as we know, filled with finite beings, a finite world, a limited world? So what Hashem did was that Hashem, the Ari HaKadosh teaches, Hashem was mitzamtzem his Or Ein Sof. Hashem limited his own infinite essence, contracted within himself, and began a process of billions, perhaps trillions of steps of becoming less and less infinite. Becoming a little bit finite, a little bit more finite, a little bit more finite, until eventually after trillions and trillions of steps, the Seder HaHishtalshelus, the order of the devolution of God's light. We talk of devolution, not evolution. Evolution implies that we are getting more advanced. But in a spiritual sense, we talk about devolution, we're becoming less advanced because we started with the infinite light and now we're dealing just as simple human beings. We've gone down in where we were. In the order of the devolution or the reduction of Hashem's or Hashem's light until eventually there is a physical world. So the first step in this process, Hashem withdrew into himself and he created, the Ari says, a halal, an empty vacuum. And then into this empty vacuum, Hashem released lights from himself, pieces of himself, pieces of his essence. Now every light in Kabbalah, every or, always needs a kli, always needs a vessel. A good parable to it is the human being. The essence of the human being is the neshama, the soul. But this soul needs to fill a body, needs to fill a vessel. If the soul wouldn't have a vessel, it couldn't be in this world. In a limited world, there has to be a vessel that limits the light. There has to be some container that contracts, that limits the infinite. So the Oros, before we got to a physical world, before there was our world, these were very, very elevated concepts. These were spiritual lights with spiritual vessels on a very, very high level. Then after many, many stages of becoming further limited, eventually it became the physical world. But initially it was at an extraordinarily high, radiant, spiritual level. There was a tremendous explosion. The kelim shattered. The vessels shattered. And the Shviras HaKelim is what the Torah is hinting at when the Torah talks about the death of Malchei Edom. The kings of Edom who die in the end of Parshas Vayishlach is really a hint to the idea of Shviras HaKelim. So let's just explain a little bit. Ari says, for example, one of the lights that Hashem released from himself was called Chesed. There was a keli, there was a vessel called Chesed. The keli, the vessel of Chesed, wanted to absorb as much Or Ein Sof, as much light as it could. And it wanted to absorb so much, it wasn't willing to share the Or Ein Sof with other kelim, with other vessels. So it shattered. And that occurred again and again. Step after step, there was a shattering. The vessels fell to a lower level, to the level of Klipos. And that's why now there's a physical world where there are sparks of divine light. The sparks have to be elevated to be brought back into Kalim and ultimately back to the Or Ein Sof, to the infinite light. So it all sounds very, you know, esoteric, hard to understand, hard to grasp, a bunch of words, images. One of the, you know, special features of the Torah of Chassidus, the Torah of the Baal Shem Tov, that the Baal Shem Tov tried to take Kabbalah and to translate Kabbalah into very human categories, to take the imagery of the Kabbalah and to translate it into psychology. So, for example, the Kabbalah talks about Gimel Rishonos and Zayin Tachtonos. It talks about Chachma Bina Das being one level, and then Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and Malchus being another level. The Tanya, in his book, Likutei Amarim, tries to point out that that's really a way to live, that a person should have moach shalit al alev, a person's mind should rule over his heart, and a person should invest in his mind, and when he invests in his mind will rule over the heart, because the wisdom can rule over the emotions. So he wanted to take what were esoteric concepts and translate it into very human definitions. In many works of Chassidus, you'll find the phrase "V'al derech avoda," on the way of service. In other words, how do we translate these concepts into service, into human categories? So here, there's this concept of shviras hakelim, and Hashem produced lights and vessels. The vessels wanted all the light to themselves; they shattered, and this is the secret of the world. What does it mean? So, to explain what it means, we have to go to the book of Malachim and the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. The Navi tells us, Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, Vayivneha Sheva Shanim. He built it, the Beis HaMikdash, 7 years. Ask the Zohar, there is a letter missing. What letter is missing in this phrase, Vayivneha Sheva Shanim? Beis. It should say Vayivneha Bisheva Shanim. What does it mean Vayivneha? He built the Beis HaMikdash Sheva Shanim. Says the Zohar, Vayivneha Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash. Not that he built it over 7 years. What he built was 7 years. Sheva Shanim is the definition of what was built. What is Sheva Shanim? Sheva Shanim represents the 7 days of creation, the 7 lower midos, the 7 expressions of the vessels, the 7 vessels that shattered, the 7 kings of Edom who die. That's what Shlomo HaMelech built. When Shlomo HaMelech builds the Beis HaMikdash, if you read Perek Ches of the book of Malachim, we have a very unusual tefillah. Shlomo HaMelech finishes building the Beis HaMikdash, and he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hein HaShamayim U'Shmei HaShamayim Lo Yechal Kalucha. The heavens, what's above the heavens, it couldn't possibly contain you. Afki abayis azeh asher achinosi. Could this house that I prepared contain you? You transcend space, the most elevated space I can imagine. The heavens, what's above the heavens, you're beyond that. So this little building's going to hold you? Shlomo asks a question. Basically, what's the point of what I did? I built a house for the Shechina. How could the Shechina be in a house? And then Shlomo goes on to say, therefore everyone who wants to get close to you should come to this house. And even the non-Jews, when they daven, they should come to this house. And they should bring their karbanas to this house. And their tefillah should come to this house. And from this house it will come up to you. And you will answer from the heavens. He just said that there was no point in building the house. And then he goes on to say, therefore the house is going to work. What's he saying? What Shlomo HaMelech was saying is something very deep. The question was the answer. How could a limited item have Hashem's presence if it first recognizes that it can't have Hashem's presence? If Shlomo builds a house and understands this house, it's a building. How could a building have Hashem? if he understands that his building can't have Hashem, then his building will have Hashem. But if he thinks that the house that I build can have Hashem, then already there's no way he's going to be able to have Hashem. He can't have Ashras Hashchina until he first realizes that it's impossible, normally, physically, with limited categories, to have Ashras Hashchina. When he realizes that the house, namely the Midos, each on their own, can't possibly have Hashem, then he has Hashem. In other words, the secret of what Ramchal and the Ari HaKadosh were teaching when they talked about the Shviras HaKelim is that sometimes even something godly, something amazing, something spiritual, can have at its root the core of all evil, a very deep sense of ego and arrogance to the point that it already is not religious. Let's say someone is Mr. Chesed, loves to do Chesed. He's on the phone all the time, you know, helping people and raising money for things that are important needs, and he's running to hospitals and running to Shiva homes. He's a person of Chesed. He's a paragon of Chesed. If the person of Chesed says, I do so much Chesed, I have Hashem in my Chesed, I have the Almighty in my Chesed, where is the Almighty? Here, this is where he is. A fellow next to me who never goes out to visit the Shiva homes and who's never running around in the hospitals, but he's a person who's learning and he's a real expert in Torah and his mind is filled with Torah thoughts. He's a parasite. He's not a servant of Hashem because he's not doing Chesed. Or the fellow who's learning, who's sitting and learning, and his mind is immersed in Hashem's Torah, which is the highest of religious experiences, the Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. He's immersed in Hashem's Torah, and he's learning 24 hours a day, or 20 hours a day, and he's writing great Chidushe Torah. And he says, Hashem is here, because Hashem is in the Torah. Hu v'chachma so echad, Hashem is one with his Torah. Torah is what gives the world its life, as the Nefesh HaChaim explains in Shaar Dalet. I'm giving the world life. This is the most important thing in the world. The fellow down the block, who's, you know, a soldier, who's risking his life to save lives of other Jews, but who doesn't open a Gemara, he doesn't have God. I have God, but he doesn't have God. The truth is, that attitude that tries to hold the Almighty into a particular vessel means that it's already not a religious attitude. If you try to claim one of the holy vessels, whether it be the vessel of Chesed, or the vessel of Das, knowledge of Torah, or the vessel of Yiras Shamayim, Gvura, or the vessel of, you know, teaching Torah, whatever the vessel is, a person who tries to say, the Almighty, the Infinite, is in this vessel holds all the light, that's not serving Hashem anymore. That's ego. Each person has certain gifts. One person, as the Tanya explains, is a great intellectual, enjoys to study and likes to sit and think. Someone else has other gifts. He doesn't have the zitzfleisch to sit and learn Torah all day. He loves, though, to run around and to help people and to save people's lives and to be dealing with crises. Hashem gives each person a different set of gifts. If someone says, the thing that I happen to be doing, the thing that I love, that is the container that limits the Or Ein Sof, that limits the infinite light, it's all here, then he's already not serving Hashem. What he's doing is he's serving himself. That's why the first of the Malchei Edom, his name was Bela. And in fact, the Ari says that Bela was similar to Bil'am, because Bela is from the word boleya, to swallow it all for himself. To say, a person who swallows, who takes in, he's self-centered. That's not what it means to serve Hashem. To serve Hashem at its core means that it's not about me, it's about what is the Ratzon Hashem, what is the will of Hashem. To give a parable to this, not necessarily from, you know, the most religious of sources, but I think that this parable is very true. We all know that in Israel there's a major divide, there always has been, between the right and the left, between the revisionists, the Likudniks, and the leftists, the Laborites, the Ben-Gurion, the Weizmanns. Always been a big divide between the right and the left. What's not so well known is the level of Mesirus Nefesh on the part of Menachem Begin, who was the person of the right. Menachem Begin, in 1944, had a price on his head. The British were looking to kill him, and they offered 10,000 pounds for anyone who would report him. And David Ben-Gurion sent members of the Haganah to look for Begin. And if they couldn't find Begin, to find other members of the Irgun Tzva'i Lumi, the Etzel, hand them over to the British. And they were in fact handed over to the British. There's a period in Israeli history called the season, when there was an open hunting season on Jews by Jews. And members of the Irgun Tzva'i Lumi of the Etzel said to Begin, Begin, Haba lahargacha, hashkem lahargo. These people are rodfim, they're mosrim. We should kill them when they come to report us to the British. And Begin, really an amazing thing. Think about really sacrificing himself for an ideal. Begin said the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed when Jews turned their weapons against other Jews. That's what Josephus describes, that Yochanan of Gush Chalav was killing people in the Beis HaMikdash, and was it Yosef ben Giyura, and all these, Shimon ben Giyura, these fights back and forth, Jews fighting Jews, and that's what caused the second Beis HaMikdash to be destroyed. He said, we cannot cause the third, hopefully third, temple to be destroyed with a Jew fighting another Jew. So if they shoot us, they'll shoot us, but we will only shoot the British. We'll never shoot fellow Jews. And after 10 months, Ben-Gurion stopped the season, and in 1946, Ben-Gurion joined in Begin's efforts to fight the British. The state was declared. Ben-Gurion wouldn't even have Begin sign the Declaration of Independence. It wasn't even Olal HaRayon. Ben-Gurion, in 1949, when Begin brought the Altalena ship to Israel with weapons that were for Tzahal, for the army needed them. Ben-Gurion sent Yitzhak Rabin to the beaches of Tel Aviv with a group of soldiers to fire on the Altalena. He said that the cannon that blew up the ship was the Totach HaKadosh, the holy cannon. He said, we need to have a civil war in order to show who is in charge of this country, to be a nation like other nations. And he sent a sniper to look for Begin and to try to get Begin. Begin ended up off the ship wounded because he was shot at. And again, Begin got on the radio and said, we will not have a civil war. We will not shoot back. 1967, Ben-Gurion's already in retirement because of the Lavon affair, and he's living in Stebocare, and Levi Eshkol is the prime minister, and Nasser throws the observers out of Sinai, and he announces that the Straits of Tiran are closed to Israeli shipping, and Levi Eshkol gets on the radio to try to give a speech and calm everybody down, and the different pages get mixed up in the speech, and he mumbles and he bumbles, and everyone's upset. The headlines of the newspapers say, Eshkol, resign, we need someone in charge who can save us from what would have, forbid, be another Holocaust. Nasser said he's going to throw the Jews into the sea. So Eshkol decided, finally, we'll have unity. He was a laborite. He went to Menachem Begin's apartment in Tel Aviv. He said, Menachem Begin, for years, no one would talk to you. They even pursued you. But now we need Achdus. Come join the government. This is his chance. And Menachem Begin said no. He said, the Jewish people are in danger. The state of Israel is in danger. Ben-Gurion, who is my enemy, did lead the Jewish people successfully in 1948. I know that Ben Gurion wouldn't join if I join. Get Ben Gurion to join, and I won't join. Better that Ben Gurion be the leader to save Am Yisrael. So they went to Ben Gurion. He said, I'm never joining. So then Begin joined. But that was the story. Begin himself, you know, here's something that his whole life, he gave his life for this goal of creating a state and being the leader of the state. And then when he had his chance, he surrendered it because it wasn't about him, it was about the state, it was about the nation. So that's the idea that the Ari HaKadosh is teaching, that when there is a particular mida, a particular attribute, whether it's the attribute of chesed, the attribute of Talmud Torah, a person can't say, well, this is my mida, this is my thing, this is where Hashem is. Hashem is not where you are. Hashem is where I am. If a person tries to do that, then he is violating the idea that Hashem is infinite. He's trying to limit Hashem. It's like taking that parable again of a plastic cup, putting the plastic cup under Niagara Falls and saying, Niagara Falls is going to be here in this cup. How could it be? It's going to blow up. A person is going to say that Hashem is only in my midah, and he's not willing to sacrifice himself and not willing to appreciate that Hashem's not only in his midah, Hashem's in other midos as well. His midah eventually becomes a non-religious midah. His Torah becomes not real Torah Hashem. It becomes ego. His chesed becomes not the chesed of Hashem. It becomes his ego. It makes him feel good. And that's the root. That's the root of the Shvira Sakelim. That's the root of the shattering of the vessels. The root of the shattering of the vessels is a sense of ego. And a sense of ego can even appear in a religious context. Someone who says, Hashem is only in this limited vessel of mine, that's already ego. That's Malchei Edom. Why is the secret of the Shvira Sakelim in the Parsha that talks about the kings of Edom? Because it's rooted at a misunderstanding of what it is to be a king. A king who thinks that I'm a king because I'm better, I'm greater, it's my way, that's what has, my way has the presence of Hashem. That is actually ego, and that's not service of Hashem. That always leads to a shvira, that leads to a break, and that's not the real way to serve Hashem. You know, my daughter, she loves to come with me to shul, and she comes to the Daf Yomi that we have in the shul. So this Shabbos, she had a friend over, and the friend's going through a hard time, her father's not well, and her friend doesn't like to come to the Daf Yomi. So my daughter woke up before her friend woke up, and she said to me, Abba, can I come with you to shul? So I told her, you know the story of Mordechai of Lechovitch with the horse. She said, yes, I know the story. I said, so you know the answer. It's a famous story that Mordechai of Lechovitch, he was very careful to always buy a beautiful esrog. Always get a beautiful esrog. And he didn't have any money. So he would really deny himself for months and months to store away money to save the funds to get a beautiful esrog. So one year he went to go get an esrog, and as he was walking to get to the next town to go buy a beautiful esrog, it was very rare to have an esrog in Poland, he met a Jew who was sitting by the side of the road crying. He said, why are you crying? He said, I'm a water treger, I'm a water schlepper, I bring the water from the well, and I'm old, and I don't have the ability to really do a good job, but I put it up on a wagon, and the horse pulls the water, and my horse just died, and I don't have the money to buy a new horse. So Mordechai of Lechovitch took all the money out of his pocket and he handed it to this Jew. He said, go get a new horse. He came home, his wife said, where's the esrog the whole year? We didn't have three meals a day, we had two meals to save for this esrog. Where's the esrog? And Mordechai Lechovitch said, every year we're yotze the mitzvah of esrog with an esrog, and this year we're yotze with a horse. That's how we're yotze the mitzvah of esrog. So what was Mordechai of Lechovitch teaching? That sometimes you have to say, what does Hashem want? Hashem, I love the esrog, but it's not what Hashem wants. Hashem wants me to be yotze the mitzvah of esrog with a horse. So my daughter didn't come to the Daf Yomi shiur yesterday. She stayed with her friend because she was yotze the Daf Yomi by staying with her friend. that the lesson of Shvira Sakelim is we can't take that aspect of religious service that happens to be the one that we love and try to limit Hashem into this aspect, say he's here, he's not elsewhere. Because then already it's not religious service, then it's personal service. And that root is the root of the Yetzer Hara, the root of evil. So that's why the Gemara says that what is the Yetzer Hara? Seor Shebe'isa, the Yetzer Hara is the leaven within the dough. In what way is the leaven within the dough the Yetzer Hara? Because the leaven within the dough, that which makes the dough rise, that which creates the sense of ego, even very slight, almost imperceptible, that is the core of evil. The core of evil is this sense of yeshus, sense of being something. That's why the matzah, lechem oni, the poor man's bread. The matzah is nama demehem nusa, the Zohar says, the bread of faith, the bread of absolute willingness to do the will of Hashem. Whatever He tells us to do, that's what we're going to do. As the Maharal explains, the matzah is something which is pashut. It doesn't have, it isn't in a particular limit. It's very simple. Maharal says that matzah, lechem pashut, is like big day lavan of a kohen gadol. Lavan, the Maharal says, is a color which is pashut. And what the Maharal is trying to say is that both matzah and big day lavan represent the opposite of the shir sakelim, the willingness to do the will of Hashem, whatever it is He might tell me to do. I may have a particular midah, but I'm going to overcome my own ego, my own personal interest to do the ratzon Hashem. And that's why on Pesach we're so machmir with chametz, because if chametz represents the root of the Yetzer Hara, this sense of ego which could even penetrate into religiosity, we have to go to the complete opposite extreme. The Rambam says that even though generally we should have the middle road in regards to humility, the Rambam says a person should be an extremist with absolutely no ego whatsoever, to be completely humble. So then you'll ask, well then, we should never eat chametz. Why do we eat chametz after Pesach? So the Zohar says that once we've had the matzah, and once we've absorbed the lesson of matzah, of that absolute humility and willingness to do the will of Hashem, a little bit of chametz is good for rischa d'oraisa, for the passion of learning Torah. And in learning Torah, sometimes a person has to get a little bit of a sense of personal satisfaction. To really enjoy Torah learning, the Zohar says, you need to have a little bit of ego, a little bit of rischa d'oraisa. But first you need to have Pesach. On Pesach we get rid of the chametz, even to the completest mashu, the little bit we also get rid of, to get rid of any sense of ego. And then Bezrat Hashem, we're ready to have a little bit after Pesach. So we should all have a chag kasher v'sameach.